This is AWLS, podcasts on wilderness medicine from the University of Utah School of Medicine.
This is Richard Ingebretson with the University of Utah School of Medicine. We are grateful that you came in and listened to us today. We're always happy when you listen to our AWLS podcast series. This is a wilderness medicine podcast that teaches people about wilderness medicine. Every time we go away from our home, out into the backcountry, there are things happening that we need to know about. This is a medical podcast and helps people to understand the issues that can be faced out there. We remind you all to go to www.wildmedu, that's the letter U, wildmedu.org. This is the School of Medicine's Wilderness Medicine site. Everything on that site is for free to learn. We do have some certifications for you if you need to pass them, but we want you to learn and be safe as we all enjoy this incredibly beautiful world of ours. One of the neat things about going into the backcountry is trying new sports, trying new things, but whenever you do that, you also have to know about the risks and also the medical aspects if you have to treat people or if there is a danger associated with it. One of the most incredible sports that very few people do by comparison in the world is getting on top of ice. By that I mean getting on frozen rivers and frozen lakes, frozen ponds, and doing things like ice skating or better still is fishing. Fishing is an insanely popular and wonderful sport and a great way to go outdoors and enjoy the beauties of the world. But getting on ice and drilling a hole in the ice and fishing that way takes particular skill and an understanding. But there is a lot of medicine associated with that we want to just briefly mention today. I spent a lot of time in the outdoors with family and friends, and this is a sport that is new to me. Getting into the mountains by the area where I live in the United States, there are lakes which freeze over and people go out on them and they will drill a hole in the ice and then they'll put a tent up around that ice and put a space heater in there and they can wait for hours enjoying each other's company as they fish for that is underneath the ice. Everybody knows what ice is. It is frozen water. What's interesting about water, as it begins to freeze, it becomes less dense than water so that it floats. Water, as it freezes, generally becomes more dense as it turns into ice, but right at the time it turns into ice, it expands and becomes light and floats to the surface. And then as it gets colder, it becomes more dense again. So right at where ice, where water freezes, it is less dense than water itself and floats to the top. Now that's interesting because if it didn't do that, water would freeze from the bottom up and life under the ice would be stuck in ice rather than in water. So this is a rare and an interesting thing about as ice cools. And the other thing that is interesting about ice is that because it floats, it starts to freeze from the bottom down as that boundary layer between the water and ice exists. And so ice can become very thick. And it doesn't take much ice to become thick enough. It's very strong that allows you to walk on it. What that means is It's not as strong as, say, if you're walking on concrete or steel or something like that, but ice has really nice bonds and will allow people to walk on it and go out and fish. But the first warning before anybody gets onto the ice to do this is to make sure that you understand where you're walking and exactly how ice works. You need to be sure that when you get out there that the ice is going to be thick enough to sustain your weight, and that it's going, or several people's weight, before you get on it. And the other thing is to make sure that you have the knowledge to do that, as flowing water under ice will actually change the dynamics of the freezing rate So if you're on a river or part of a river, or there, you know that you're near on a pond or a lake where the water is beginning to flow under it, the dynamics change there also. So that is the first thing to be careful with. But it is a romantic sight to think about going out in a winter wonderland and getting on the ice and getting away from the hustle and bustle of city in the middle of winter pulling out the fishing routine that you may do in the summer or the spring or fall and be able to continue that beautiful sport and to do that. Well, what are the injuries that are associated with ice fishing? Now, you think about it, you think, well, gosh, what can there be? Well, there's some obvious ones that you think about, but there's a lot of studies out there, actually, that have looked at the injuries and the dangers that are associated with this, and then the treatment protocols of it. And since this is a medical podcast, we want you to know what those are. So there, through the years, specifically, there's been four or five studies that specifically looked at this, at the problems that are associated with ice fishing. And those are the ones we'll just talk briefly about today. And some of them are not as obvious as you would think that are with others. And first and foremost, the biggest percentage of ice injuries that happens are orthopedic or musculoskeletal. And that is due to the fact that you can slip on the ice. Almost half of all injuries that get reported and have to be treated are people who slip on the ice. And what happens is when you stand on ice, the pressure from your body pressing on the ice raises the temperature slightly of the ice, and a little film of water can form, and that makes ice very, very slippery. Ice itself has a relatively high coefficient of friction and can easily be walked on. But if the temperature is such and you stand on it, you can also make the coefficient of friction and make it much more slippery and fall. So what happens when you fall? Well, you land on your arms and your hands, you injure your arms and your legs, and you land on your rear end, and that can injure your back. You can even injure your leg and ankle. You get abrasions, and you get twists, and you get pulls. That means muscle sprains and strains. So be aware of those. So if you do go ice fishing, then you need to be careful and make sure that you wear ice spikes so that you don't slip. You should also make sure that in your first aid kit you take something to treat musculoskeletal injuries. And along with that, the minor trauma, which constitutes about 40% of injuries that are reported, are ones like lacerations, abrasions, contusions, punctures, and not surprisingly, hook injuries. So if you do go out into the backcountry in ice fishing, your first aid kit needs to be able to handle all of those. Now, that's usually falling on the ice, but it also is like the fishhook injuries are being stuck with those, or taking your ice pick and cutting through the ice, or the saw and cutting yourself. And that's a problem. And along with that, if you set up a tent, anything that can happen while you're setting up a tent. But it's interesting, one of the more common injuries, and this is up between 5 and about 8% of injuries or problems that happen with this, are burns, hot thermal injuries. And you think, well, what are you talking about? Well, a lot of people, if not most people, will set up a heater. And those space heaters are hot, and they're designed to be hot to heat the tent. So with that in mind, that's whatever heating system you use to heat the ice houses, the ice tents. So you need to be able to have in your first aid kit something that will treat burns, surprisingly enough, in ice fishing, which is counterintuitive, of course. And every time I study something in wilderness medicine, I'm always surprised to think about the things that I think about or that I didn't know about. Another common problem with ice fishing is major trauma. Now, that happens such as amputations with the saw. They can be like cutting out the tip of a finger or even bigger. And then organ-based injury and closed head injuries, including concussions. So those where you get major trauma such as concussions and amputations constituted about 5 or 6% of all injuries. That's pretty high. That doesn't mean that 5 or 6% of people are going to get concussions. What it means is that if you do get injuries, 5 to 6% are going to be major trauma. The other one that happens is surprisingly are the ones that you think more about, and that is immersion or having drowned. That is people who fall through the ice and weren't prepared for that. And so that constitutes about 5% of injuries that come in. Now, the percentage of those, the number of people that actually die ice fishing is low, but it does happen. People falling into the ice is relatively high, meaning that 5% of injuries that are reported are immersion injuries and that are pulled out and survive. So that means that you have to be careful with that. We can talk about that in a minute. And then finally, the cold and thermal injuries. That is, the cold thermal injuries where you have frostbite, hypothermia, where people go out and aren't prepared. They don't set up a tent. The wind blows, or they get water on them. Surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, that is relatively low. Only about 1% of injuries that are reported are cold or thermal cold thermal injuries, because people go prepared for that. Like if I went out ice fishing, I would think I need to prepare for the cold. So most people don't get that. It's the other ones, particularly, as we said earlier, the ones that are the highest are slips on the ice and lacerations and abrasions. Those are really quite high, and you need to be prepared for that. So what you have to do when you go out is realize that the injuries and the dangers. So as a medical person and medical provider, whatever you are, whether you're just the leader of the group or the mother, father, aunt, and uncle, or you're taking someone out, or you're the nurse or the practitioner, the physician, the dentist, the physician's assistant, whatever practice you have or whatever your medical knowledge is, you just need to be aware of all of that. And be aware that ice fishing has those ice dangers. And it is what's interesting, though, it is increasing rapidly in popularity. And so with it become these ice injuries. While most ice fishing injuries are orthopedic and musculoskeletal, and it's interesting, you wouldn't think of that, but they are. They're relatively easy to treat. So you need to be prepared for anything ranging from the drowning and inhalation injuries to the trauma injuries. Ice fishing has unique risk, and thermal injuries or potential carbon monoxide poisoning from the space heaters that are commonly used to heat them. So for preparedness and also for treatment, don't overlook carbon monoxide. There is a lot of that out there. It is in those tents, so you need to keep them ventilated and know how to manage those space heaters. Counterintuitively, cold thermal injuries, as we said, rank very low on the list of common trauma sustained while ice fishing. Hypothermia did not affect most of the people who were studied because they go in prepared for that. In fact, and most of the studies that were looked at, they thought they'd see a lot more thermal, that is cold thermal injuries, but that was counterintuitive. People really go out prepared for that. Individuals and individual injuries, most often from ice fishing, are largely in the young people and in male. And this number of that we see that happens in ice fishing is a very similar number that we see in drowning victims, we see in avalanche, that we see in biking injuries, and we see in car accidents. And so that is something to point out as you take people out with you or you're getting ready to treat people, to be aware of that. Injuries, while aware, do occur, and they may be more severe than those incurred in traditional fishing. Now, if you think about that, because of being on ice and slipping on ice, but fisher people can slip on the rocks and fall in the water just as well. And we're not going to talk about that in today's research. But the injury numbers for ice fishers were lower than those in traditional fishing, however, due to the fact that ice fishing is much less common and only occurs in areas where lakes freeze. In most areas on the planet where people live, there isn't ice, to be honest. You have to create ice, but you don't do ice fishing. However, people do travel and go to those areas where that happens. Another issue, if we look at young male people who are more likely to be injured in ice fishing, is alcohol and drugs. So the data that was looked at didn't capture the intoxication rates nor the drug rates, but it is a sport that commonly involves alcohol because people get under their tents and they'll be using alcohol while they're in there, and then the combination becomes a problem. One of the things that alcohol can do and drug use is result in poor judgment, and that does not mix well with ice when people are exposed to cold temperatures, making hypothermia more common and a risk of poor judgment more common. So working with sharp objects, knives, hooks, saws, and monoxide and equipment such as that does not do well if you're impaired in what you're trying to do. So that is the trial, and those are the problems that we see associated with ice fishing. And we want to make you aware of that in case you get into that or you treat that and help prevent that. So here's some rules that you can follow. Is make sure that you have a first aid kit that manages those injuries that we just mentioned. And they have special ones that you would not normally think about. If you are advising people, patients or friends or others, remember to tell them to leave the car on shore. Every year, motor vehicles go through the ice, and people have drowned as a result of that. Instead of driving your gear onto the ice, people like to do that. Pack utility sled with ice fishing gear on it that way. And I know that in many cases, ice will support the weight of a car, but if you aren't 100% sure or worried, park on the shore and then get that skid and take your gear out with you. Make sure you share the plans with family members and friends. Never go out without anyone anywhere knowing you're going. It's better to go with people so that you can be rescued. If you fall through the ice or you have injuries, you get knocked out, you have a concussion, you really need to be with someone on this particular sport, since one of the major risks we see in ice fishing is a concussion. And so make sure if you can be within cell phone reception, you can drop a pin to share where your parked car is, which should be off the shore, in case of an emergency. And one of the things that people don't like to do when they go ice fishing, although it's becoming more popular as helmets has, is one, two, wear a personal flotation device and make sure you're, as we said, you're not alone. Because if you have a PFD on you, if you do fall through the ice, there's often other ice fisher people out there doing it. They can come over and help you. And if you have a personal flotation device on, your survival time will last longer because as your muscles fatigue, then your ability to breathe and get out of the water lessens. So wear a PFD. And if you can, when you're walking across the ice, put on a helmet. Wearing a helmet is so important in all activities where there is hard surfaces and fast speeds or you can fall and hit your head. We want you to carry an ice spud or a chisel. One of the problems is ice varies in thickness and in condition. One side of the lake or pond may receive more direct sunlight or vary in ice thickness due to changes in depth, and this will allow you to check for that. So as you proceed, use the spud or if you have a chisel to test the thickness of the ice so you don't you won't fall through. Very hard jabs on the chisel will reveal the thickness of the ice before you step. And you should become very aware of how thick ice that you can step on. If you have ice spikes, are a must-have item, and you should have them with you as you work your way out onto the surface of the ice. Holding on with something in a hand that you can grab onto is useful too, but make sure that you're wearing those ice spikes. It's really a must. Now, the other thing is, be very cautious with near moving water. Be extremely careful of that because near River Mouse is, oh my gosh, it's beautiful with the water flowing and the sounds around it. Bridges and islands and over reefs and springs. Current almost always causes ice to be thinner and be much less stable. So do that. And then finally with melted ice, just stay off. Avoid getting onto ice if it is melted away from the shore. Now, I know that this people say, well, I can just step on it. What that means, though, is melting is already underway, and ice can shift position as wind direction changes. There's a lot of stories out there where people have decided to get on the ice because they know it's going to be thicker as they move out, but it's going to be very thin when you get on, and that's where a lot of problem has it. So if it's moved away from the shore, don't do it. And if you can see open water in the lake and the wind picks up, get off as soon as possible, because waves from open water can quickly break up large areas of ice, putting anglers at risk in a matter of minutes. So be very, very careful with that. And if you see open water, pack it up and just get away. It's one of the safety tips that we can carry. Tell you is that. And then make sure that you have a safety line. So if someone falls through and they've got a personal flotation device on, you can throw them a rope and pull them out. And then make sure with those heaters that you understand that carbon monoxide is a really, really risk. Be aware of that and make sure that the people that are with you know about that, so that you don't die of monoxide poisoning. There's a lot of cases out there where people in tents and just camping, but specifically with ice fishing. There's a lot of stuff in this, and most people will not go ice fishing, but this is a podcast that is essential for you to listen to, because you may treat this or you may end up ice fishing. It's a beautiful thing in our winter wonderlands that we have on this great planet of ours. Anyway, this ends the podcast on ice fishing, its association medical problems and the diseases and the risks associated with it. And have a good time out there as you go and do ice fishing. And as always, we say thank you for listening.